Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. You know, over the last 4 years of recording this podcast, I've learned a couple things. And one of them is that anything involving how startups fund, grow, or accelerate their access to capital is a very, very popular topic here on the show. And that's exactly what we're going to get into today. We're going to talk a lot about revenue-based financing. So what is that? How does it work? And how do you go about getting it? Now, before we get too far into that, I want to give everyone a quick reminder that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Gusto. Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems. Whether it's talent management, payroll, or onboarding tools, Gusto's HR platform has it all for you. Be smarter than your competitors and try a 3-month free subscription. You might be able to get a prescription. I don't think they cover that though. You can just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. Once again, gusto.com/startup hustle. There's a link for that in the show notes, as well as a link to today's guest's companies. With me today, I've got Asher Ismail, who's the co-founder of Uncapped. And this is a fintech and e-commerce company that specializes in revenue-based financing straight out of London, England, and God save the Queen. Asher, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Hey, thanks so much for having me here. Looking forward to the conversation.
I am too. And, you know, I'm glad I got my God Save the Queen in there because I know that's important to people. And that's what you say in England, right? Am I wrong about that?
All the time, every day.
That's right. Yeah. And every time I speak to someone in your section of the world, I always throw that in, and many seem surprised that I even seem to know that there is a queen. Anyway, thanks for joining me. I like to start my episodes with a little bit of backstory about you and your company. So let's dive right in.
Sure thing. So, you know, hey, I'm one of the founders of Uncapped. And what we're really passionate about is that founders shouldn't have to give away equity in order to fund their growth. So we provide fast, flexible funding to online businesses for marketing, inventory, or hiring without personal guarantees or dilution. You know, my background is in startups. This is the third business that I've started over the years. And you know, the biggest problem I always had was getting the funding that I needed. And you know, working with hundreds of other founders, you know, I've seen how they've struggled too. So for me, it's a dream to get to work on Uncapped. Every day I get to help other entrepreneurs get the funding they need. And you know, our first customers were also my friends. So from the start, we've really tried to create something that is really fast and fair and friendly, and you know, what you'd want to give to a mate. We're now in 22 countries, including the US, UK, Germany, Poland, Spain. Our business has been growing exponentially. So we're deploying, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to founders. And we actually now fund more businesses in a day than the typical VC will fund in a year.
So when it comes to RBF, revenue-based funding or financing, some people use funding in lieu of financing. We've talked about this before on the show. Why don't we just, let's get a quick description of what that is and why it's a little bit different from like the typical like VC investment that's either equity-based or attached to a convertible note or, you know, I mean, there's 10 million other ways to do it. So why is RBF different? Oh, and by the way, you can go to weareuncapped.com to go check out Ishmael's business. So there you go. All right. RBF.
Yeah. Well, I mean, RBF and Uncapped is, you know, a new way for founders to fund their growth. And how it works is that we provide equity and interest-free investments that start from 10K up to 5 million. And we charge a flat 6% fee on the capital that we provide. Businesses only repay the capital as they make revenue. So there's no set repayment date, no compounding interest, equity, or personal guarantees. My favorite is that there's also no pitching or business plans or coffees required, which means you can really get back to growing your company. Maybe just give you an example of, you know, how it would work. Say you had a business and you wanted 100K to spend on marketing. We would take back a fixed portion of your daily revenue. That might be, say, like 5%. So we got 106K back. So we don't take any equity or personal guarantees or warrants or other hidden fees. You're just paying that 6% flat fee. And, you know, critically, because the repayments, they're tied to your revenue. If your business slows down, you know, as a founder, you're not cut out. Those repayments just also slow down. So we believe it's the most affordable, flexible type of financing available to growth companies.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one of the things that, as I mentioned when we started the show, you know, any type of startup is always seen, you know, always interested in how can I fund this thing? And it's such a popular topic, not only on air, but off air. I find that anytime I go somewhere, people always want to talk about the podcast, which is a different subject because I'd rather be known as the full scale guy, by the way, than the startup hustle guy. But I end up having these discussions and they invariably lead into, well, I need capital and resources. And how do I get it? Now, a lot of people get, I would imagine a lot of your users are still companies that are venture backed. But one of the things that I find that a lot of my peers, guests, and other people have used RBF for is kind of like being in between rounds as well. Because if you're trying to raise a full round, you know, the thing that sucks about that, in episode 2 of all Startup Hustle episodes, so literally it is titled Getting Funded Sucks. And like literally that was the first topic we felt we should address after the first episode where we just talked about what we're going to do on the show. So like clearly that was a common issue and a common problem, but you know, so I find that a lot of people are addressing RBF or funding with revenue-based financing that way. What are some other ways or other like situations where this offer is, so, you know, that whole act of getting funded, it's like a full-time job. It's, and it's soul sucking. Like you mentioned, you don't get to focus on running or growing your business. What are some of the other use cases or benefit scenarios where people are really leveraging what you guys do to get shit done faster?
Yeah, well, on your first point, though, I can really agree with you that, you know, fundraising sucks. And, you know, in fact, even Uncapped, it was born out of my own frustrations I faced when I was like launching and running my first businesses. Like I did my first one in 03. And I was young and I was just trying to raise 100K. And I probably had 100 meetings and got 100 no's. And, yeah, you know, I didn't want to take financing from the banks because they all wanted personal guarantees. And venture capital, you know, it wasn't ideal either because I didn't have that track record or connections or those warm introductions. And so I just kept missing out on growth opportunities. So I can definitely relate to your first point there. We also, in our world, we definitely see lots of folks who, you know, want that capital to bridge them between rounds. Because as you say, one of the big challenges is the time that it takes, right? It absolutely is a massive investment. Even if you have an incredible business, you know, the typical funding round, it's going to take months to close. And it's going to be a big draw on your team and yourself and, you know, your ability as a founder to otherwise execute. But I think the most common way I would say people use the capital that we have at Uncapped is really to accelerate their growth. You know, if you're a business and you have found a product idea where you have product market fit, and you know, if you take, you know, 1 pound, say you put it into Facebook and you get 3 pounds back, you know, that is a business where you want more fuel for the fire. And what we're able to do at Uncapped is, you know, help those founders access that capital incredibly quickly to really be able to scale their business and take advantage of that growth opportunity.
So you mentioned the pound. We're discussing the British pound there as opposed to the US dollar or the euro or any of that. So with that, do you actually work with, does Uncapped work with companies on a worldwide basis?
Yeah, so I should say we're actually in 22 countries.
The US, you did mention that. You did
a big
mention
market
that,
yeah. For us. So yeah, dollars definitely a big part of what we do.
I felt like I found myself there. I was like, wow, I can actually remember a reference where someone had referred to anything in pounds. I do, having a bunch of employees in the Philippines, I deal with the Filipino peso a lot. And do you find that, are there levels of complexity that come with operating in that many countries?
Absolutely. I think, you know, international is definitely one of the most challenging things that you can take on as a way to grow your business. But one of the interesting things we found is, you know, the type of founders often that we're funding, people who are running online businesses or e-commerce businesses, they often have so much similarity between them across markets. Because often when you're running an e-commerce business, from day one, you're thinking about being international. And sometimes you'll find, you know, businesses in that space in two different countries might have more in common than, you know, two businesses in the same country who are just working on totally different products. So, you know, we've really played that to our advantage. One of the ways that we do that is because, you know, when we assess companies, it's not that like typical approach where you would maybe go to a bank and you present this business plan with a bunch of numbers that you probably, you know, don't necessarily believe in yourself as you try to convince the, you know, the manager. Or, you know, we're not asking you to go to a bunch of meetings with VCs and try to, you know, pour your heart out about, you know, your business. We're actually connecting to the data that you use to run your business every day. And a beautiful thing, of course, is that the platforms and systems that online businesses run on have a lot of similarity across a lot of countries. And that means that we can, you know, serve those businesses in a really unique and special way, but also be able to be in a lot more countries. Probably a lot of other businesses at our stage.
So with that somewhat algorithmic approach, what are some of the things that that really qualify a company, and what are some things that don't?
Well, you know, what we'd say is that Uncapped is great for you if you're generating sales online for at least 6 months and you're doing at least 10K of revenue per month. So I think those are our core criteria. And, you know, we've seen the model work for like a variety of companies, both bootstrapped or venture capital backed. And, you know, it's really those businesses that are at a stage where they found something that's working and they really want to scale.
So you mentioned, like, you've used the term e-commerce a couple different times, and an e-commerce company is, well, at least by my definitions, usually a lot different from a quote tech company. So like e-commerce, are you working mainly with companies that sell products?
So we definitely have lots of companies who are what you'd think is like, hey, a traditional e-commerce business where they have, you know, inventory and they have a product that they're shipping out to customers. But we've also worked with lots of other really cool online businesses that perhaps maybe have a subscription model or doing something in the SaaS space, you know, and we're open to, you know, other models, but I think that key thing is that they're doing things online, and, you know, that allows us to understand them in a really special way and serve them.
Yeah, for those of you listening, to give you a little perspective, and I wrote about this in my book Million Dollar Bedroom. I've talked to so many people that are like, "Hey, I got a new business." I'm like, "Cool, how are you going to get it started?" They're like, "I'm going to go get a loan from a bank," and I'm like, "No, you're not, because banks don't give loans to new businesses. They also don't typically give them to businesses that are 6 months old." At least here in the US, there's like a magic a line around 2 years. Like, they want to see you in business for 2 years. Now, I like to compare a lot of the plight and struggle with my own scenario. So at Full Scale, we had 100 employees after 1 year. and a ton of revenue. And we went to go look at creating some basic banking relationships. And they were all like, no, you're not 2 years old. And, or they didn't know how to look at us because most businesses don't have 100 employees after a year. So they were really, if you're a regular listener, you know that I am frustrated, if not just flat out tired of banking's general inability to deal with the needs of startups. Now, they all want us to open accounts at their banks, but none of them seem to be suited to take on the needs of like a software company. Because I give you some examples, like with a software company, you've got code and a server and subscribers, and banks want, they're more likely to give a loan to a halfway failing company that has a truckload of bolts, like literally screws and bolts that they can say, oh, here's something tangible that we'll take if you don't pay us back. And it's, and you know, it's like, it's, I don't know, it's a weird thing. And I mean, I got to imagine that's some of the reason, and even from your personal experience, why you're like, hey, we got to do something different.
Yeah. And that's absolutely why we exist. I think the other, you know, common situation you see with, you know, high growth businesses is that they're actually reinvesting every dollar that they make into marketing or inventory, or, you know, just growing their company because they have something that is working and they, you know, want to utilize those funds. But of course, banks see that as a red flag. And, you know, the other challenge, of course, is that typically a bank loan, even if you are past that 2 year mark and you do happen to fit that profile, they'll typically also want a personal guarantee.
Yep.
And, you know, yep, which means to fund your baby, you have to put up your house. And yeah, you know, so many entrepreneurs, especially these days, they don't own a house. And, you know, they just don't come from necessarily a background that affords them to have the assets to be able to put up to support their startup. And so therefore, as an entrepreneur, you're left really usually with options that force you to give away equity. And, you know, what we're trying to do is say, hey, actually, maybe there's an alternative to that. Maybe there's a smarter way that we can understand these businesses and actually get them the capital to grow.
Yeah. And so with revenue-based financing, like you mentioned, they're going to take a percentage of your revenue until it's paid back. And it's similar to a loan. Now, the faster you grow, it's obviously in the lender's benefit for your business to grow faster because you recoup your funds faster and probably come back for more. And, you know, I mentioned it's like some of the funding issues. I'm not going to say who or what company, but within the last few months, I had a personal conversation with a founder that had exited his company and was telling me that literally with a 3-digit million exit value, that they were still not bankable at the end because they didn't look like a profitable company, but yet they were worth a multitude of millions to someone else. And like, think about how flawed that is, people. Like, you know, I do get kind of salty with bank people because I run into them and, you know, they really do. They want to chase you down. They want to know me because they think I'm going to tell everyone to come open an account at their bank. And I'll tell them, and they like kind of look at me crooked afterward. I'm like, until you figure out how to do business with startups, I'm not telling any startups to do business with you. And they're like, well, what do you mean? We're set up to do all this. But like you said, so you look at, they want something tangible. In my case, when we were funding Full Scale, we ended up funding Full Scale, not with RBF, but instead we just created our own venture debt and paid the returns to our own friends, you know, like, and we raised $750,000 in 2 weeks. We had that many believers, but a bank wouldn't give us a loan without, exactly, you're right, they wanted us to sign over our homes as collateral. And one bank wanted a $7.5 million asset to give a $750,000 loan. And I replied literally by saying, and I'm going to clean this up a little bit, but if I had that much effing money in my account right now, I wouldn't be asking you for a loan for 10% of the amount.
That's a really incredible moment.
The struggle's real. Like, I mean, and I was mad because I felt like that company had wasted my time. That bank had wasted my time. Like, tell me that before you put me through the dog and pony show that is your loan process. Now, if you want to stay away from dog and pony shows, I'll tell you that managing your team can be as easy as 1, 2, 3 with Gusto. No more late nights for processing payroll or dealing with business tax filings. No more painful spreadsheets for attendance tracking. Say hello to the new smart HR platform. You can check it out at gusto.com/startup hustle to get a free 3-month subscription. And make sure you use that. There's a link in the show notes because they really will give you 3 months for free. And, you know, why not give it a shot? I like things that work, and Gusto works. So anyway, back to what we're talking about. As you didn't realize you were getting such an advocate for revenue-based funding and financing when you logged on to record this, did you?
I didn't, but I really appreciate it. I mean, though, every founder I seem to talk to, they're starting to wake up this realization that, you know, the old models that we had of funding, that they are really broken, right? And it's sort of like, because, you know, we had a hammer, every problem is a nail. And like, you know, so therefore the only solution we were using was equity. And now as I speak to more and more founders, they're starting to consider this like wider range of options. And, you know, I honestly believe that revenue-based financing is going to be the way that, you know, every startup first thinks about, hey, how do I get that growth? So it's really refreshing to hear from you too.
Well, dude, hanging on to your equity is important because, you know, one common question is why, okay, we had a ton of people that would have invested in us, but given the fact that we were a year old, I mean, selling equity at that point for a rocket ship that's already headed to the moon, didn't make sense for us. So part of the reason that you utilize things like We Are Uncapped and revenue-based financing is because the equity is going to be worth so much more than the amount you would have taken in for it. So you use, and you know, I just literally recorded a similar episode. So my business partner at Full Scale and a very successful software founder and my co-host, Matt Watson, and I have been recording a 52-part series about how to start a tech company. And we addressed alternate types of funding, and this was one of them because, and Matt's used it at Stackify, which was acquired a little less than a year ago. And the equity that he retained sold for a hell of a lot more than it would have if he didn't use RBF. And he, you know, and it was fast. That was the main thing. It was like, hey, I want it because what's the value of your time? What's the value of your focus? And if you haven't gone out and tried to raise capital before, you really don't know what you're into. You mentioned like going to 100 companies and hearing no. How much time did that take, Asher?
Months, you know, months and months of my life that I'm never going to get back. And also, more importantly, all that time being out, you know, trying to speak to investors and convince them was time that I wasn't spending with my customers and my team.
Finding users, growing my product, building a team. Yeah. Doing anything.
Yeah.
Other than walking around, and it feels like you're going in with your hat in your hand, like almost like what is it, Oliver Twist? Please, sir, can I have some more gruel? You know, and founders and entrepreneurs are a species that is confident and king or queen of the jungle-ish, and you feel the opposite walking out of those things.
It's also about what happens after. I mean, you know, I thought when I finally did raise that money for my business that I had it figured out. Because, you know, suddenly I had millions of venture capital money in my pocket. But then I also realized, wow, I just got terribly diluted. And it just started to make me realize it's kind of depressing almost, right? To think I can work so hard and now own so little of my company. Yep. And, you know, I think the stat is that, you know, the typical founder at exit, they'll likely own less than 15% of their business. Because, you know, just equity is fundamentally the most expensive way to fund a company's growth. And yeah, it takes a long time. And it can also sometimes mean that the founder ends up losing control of their company.
That's the main thing for me, man. And, you know, like, I don't always work well with people, mainly people telling me what to do. And, you know, that's just an admission of guilt on, and it's not my greatest quality, but I mean, part of why I haven't sold equity, Matt and I owned the company 50-50, and I like it like that, you know? And if I had a third partner or an investor or something, realistically, I could be out, and I'm going to have to create a board. I'm going to have to do a lot of things. I could get fired from my own company. And then I do things differently than a lot of folks, and I hate having to explain and justify why I want to take some wild approaches at things, because a lot of people, a lot of investors and partners and stuff like that, they're like, no, we need you to stay in the lane the whole time. I'm like, but the lane is boring. You got to do things to stand out and different stuff. And it doesn't always compute. And, you know, there's a lot more to raising capital than just the act of going out and getting it. Cause depending on where you're at, like you said, you could lose control of your company. You can also, you know, there's a lot of this whole landscape and the way that all this stuff is set up and all of it. I mean, it's honestly, it's took me years to feel really comfortable in the room, in the conversation, and grasping what I could or might be getting myself into. And there's a lot of ways that equity-based funding and just all the notes and all that stuff set up that if things don't go the way you think they should or could, you are creating some major obstacles for yourself down the road.
Yeah, and Tomas, I think you're not alone. I think so many founders, they are really focused on the idea that they want to keep control, and, you know, asking them to pledge their assets or give up that board seat. You know, there's a lot of fear in that, because if you think about it, investors in a typical VC, gosh, they do this every day, right? So they totally understand those documents inside and out. As a founder, you know, how many times are you going to raise capital like that? How many of those type of deals are you going to do in your life? Maybe a handful at most if you're a really successful founder. And so there's just so many areas where you can get caught out. And so obviously it's really important to have good advisors around you and, you know, good lawyers if you're going down that route. But sometimes it's also nice to be able to be—
which, by the way, is expensive too. Which is expensive too. You mentioned taking 6%, which is nothing, by the way. But, you know, if you're looking at some of these smaller rounds, you're going to have more than that in legal.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always actually surprised at the way the legal fees work sometimes in doing those deals, because actually typically in a investment deal, the investors will actually ask you to pay their legal fees.
Yeah.
So you're like, wait a minute, how does that work exactly? But, you know, it's just a truth of this system, right? That's kind of just existed as that's the way it is. And, you know, everybody has just kind of gotten to that being the truth. But yeah, it's time to challenge that. And,
in 2020, I received $1 million investment offer for Full Scale, one that I wasn't out looking for. It kind of found us and went through a whole bunch of stuff. I was like, sure, we'll explore it. And then finally, when I got the term sheet, it included a $100,000 a year, quote, management fee. Yeah. You heard that uncomfortable silence there? That was followed by the email that I wrote that was basically like, thanks for wasting my effing time. Like, you might as well just call it interest or something else, but like, I would have been beholden to that investment forever. Like, I mean, even 1 year in, I mean, that's regardless, there's a cost of doing business. And I was like, wow. So yeah, anyway, I quit trying to raise capital at that point. We just wrote our own checks, but some of that, and you know, you talk about the plight of the founder. And, you know, you get past the X's and O's that are in the playbook of entrepreneurship and you have real life. And like, I have a wife and two kids, and my wife is incredibly understanding of all things that I do. The only thing I've told she's ever asked me to do is she's like, just please don't lose the house. Don't put us in a position where we would or could lose the house. And that's never been the case, but that's a good, like, I'm just not doing that. Like, but that's the kind of shit that you normally run into. So anyway, revenue-based financing. All right. So, You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the unique problems that e-commerce businesses face. And if you're interested in e-commerce businesses or sales on Amazon, make sure you check out my co-host, Andrew Morgan's, because he is our e-commerce and Amazon expert. He does a weekly show. He's the founder of Marknology. Go to marknology.com. They help people sell more stuff on Amazon. One of the problems that comes with selling more stuff is you've got to buy, build, or market more stuff. And that's where, like, that's one of the problems that a lot of products companies have. And before I was in software, I actually worked in the musical instrument world. And, you know, you don't always get paid. You got to build it before you get paid. And sometimes you sell it and still don't get paid for several months. And it leaves a funding gap that creates growth problems. And I would imagine that's probably one of the biggest reasons that many of people are going to weareuncapped.com and getting a loan.
I would say, you know, e-commerce founders have definitely a unique set of financial challenges. One, as you just mentioned, is typically if you're trying to build an e-commerce business, you have real upfront challenges in working capital, because your suppliers often have very difficult terms. And that makes it hard to get your e-commerce business started. But then the second part of it is often in e-commerce, there's a lot of seasonality. So there's a period of up, there's a period of down. And, you know, managing through that seasonality is like critically on everyone's mind, especially, you know, when it gets, you know, we just came through the holiday season. So being able to, you know, be stocked up with the inventory to take advantage of that big golden quarter of sales is, you know, potentially a missed opportunity, especially in the current climate that we have, where, you know, our global shipping is probably more challenged than it has ever been. And we're kind of almost at a breaking point there. And founders need to start thinking about, hey, how do they, you know, maybe stockpile a little bit more than they used to and get that inventory that they need to really take advantage and also just even to meet their customers' requirements and needs. But one of the beautiful things about e-commerce, of course, is that when you get that flywheel turning, actually you can have an e-commerce business grow incredibly fast, because, you know, you're able to actually sometimes run a multi-million e-commerce business. And we see this with our clients all the time. They're like doing millions of sales a month. And often they have like five people that are working on their team. And, you know, they're doing that because of, you know, what's the beautiful aspect of this, a model that can actually just work with that incredible scale and also, you know, serve people internationally.
Well, there's a ton of, I was reading an article in the at some point in the fourth quarter in the Wall Street Journal about how many businesses that sell things are going to basically miss out on the holiday season because of supply chain problems. Like they didn't get a chip or a part or a piece, or it was delayed or something. And, you know, there was even a dedicated like 20-minute piece on 60 Minutes here in the U.S. about the multitude of cargo ships that were just lined up and parked waiting to dock in port in LA. And, you know, so which means, well, first off, a lot of people missed that golden period you were mentioning, which means they're going to have to come back. They're going to have to order sooner or figure something out. They're either overstocked or need to make sure they're stocked. There's a lot of opportunity costs and missing that. Did you find that was problematic for people? As like, was it as problematic as it has been hyped to have been?
It's a story that honestly I've heard again and again, where, you know, founders are kind of just sometimes on their knees because they have a shipment that is sitting on the ocean somewhere that they need to get out to their customers. You know, one of our first customers was a sustainable fashion brand called Hedewin. And they had this challenge where, you know, like so many brands that are working in fashion, they always had to juggle their cash between like inventory and marketing. And they basically would have to always wait for, you know, the current season to sell before they could invest the returns of the next one. And that just kind of limited their growth. But they also ended up in this same situation in this last period where one of those shipments was missing. And, you know, you can imagine that can just have this huge knock-on effect on a business like that. You know, I think what's cool about, you know, been working with them and helping them scale is actually helping them now get, you know, larger orders out. And beautifully, because, you know, we charge that 6% fee, of course, but they were able to actually negotiate a bigger discount from their suppliers by actually ordering a larger amount and, you know, more than offset the fees. And so things like that, I think, are amazing, creating like a really beautiful like win-win where the founder wins and we win. And, you know, also, hey, those customers are actually now able to get the products they probably otherwise would miss out on in the future. So, yeah, trying to make more of those stories happen.
Yeah, being able to lever up your buying ability can be big. And, you know, I'll give you an example. So my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, if I were to print 1,000 of them, they'd be like $4.50 a copy. If I print 5,000 of them, they're like $1. So it's like literally only $1,000 more to get 3,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 more copies. And it's a no-brainer. But you got to have the money to do it. Now that I did, but I talked to a lot of people that are in that spot, you know, and you get stuck behind it, these micro orders. And then you're also running into things like Amazon at one point during the pandemic was even throttling the amount of stuff you could send. So you might only be able to send them 8 units at a time and they sell really quickly. And then you got to wait to get 8 more in and then maybe they'll let you send 10. And you're like, God. You know, so there's a lot of like, the supply chain's really nasty right now. It's a very interesting scenario. And I think people didn't, you know, consumers worldwide are finally now attuned to how delicate it is. You know, I think we got really spoiled in just assuming that everything was always going to be there and available until it wasn't.
Yeah. And I think, you know, COVID had another impact, of course, right? Because it also meant that for so many founders, you know, they were concerned that their sales might slow, right? And had to kind of rethink their planning and forecasting in that way. And, you know, I guess for us, one of the things we've been able to do, revenue-based finance, one of the beautiful things, of course, is that we don't have fixed repayments. So, you know, if your business like did slow down, you don't have to worry because the repayments actually just become smaller with the revenue. We've seen how that's also helped, you know, businesses just have a bit more confidence to go out and like make, you know, make a larger purchase or to put more into the growth of their company than maybe they otherwise wouldn't.
Once again, with me today, I've got Asher Ismail, who's the co-founder of Uncapped. Go to weareuncapped.com. I like what you're doing. I really do. I'm a big fan of anything that puts capital in front of founders. Now, speaking of capital, and I didn't mention this earlier, you guys have raised over $100 million of it. So it will say that you know a couple things about that, and congrats on that. Now, it's time for the Founders Freestyle, and that's how I like to end my shows. I say my shows. As a quick reminder, I'm not the only host of Startup Hustle now. Make sure you tune in once a week and join Lauren Conaway. Lauren is the founder of Innovate Her. Go to innovatehrkc.com, learn more about what she does. And also tune in for a weekly episode with Andrew Morgans, who talks all about e-commerce and Amazon stuff. If you haven't had enough of me and the other hosts of Startup Hustle, then check out the weekly episode I do with my business partner and Startup Hustle co-founder, Matt Watson. We are in the midst of trying to wrap up our 52-part series about how to start a tech company. In true realistic fashion, we were supposed to have our series about how to start a tech company done last year, and we're about 2.5 months behind, which feels really par for the course for most startups. So we actually feel like we're ahead of the curve by only being a couple months behind. So, all right. So with the Founders Freestyle, I'd like to give my guests an opportunity to say anything that they might've wanted to mention during the show that we didn't. And also like what from our conversation stood out for you today?
Yeah, well, maybe I'd summarize by saying, you know, fundraising, you know, is a tough and evolving process. And, you know, as an early stage online or like e-commerce founder, you need a lot of, you need bravery and agility and grit, as well as like the right information to navigate that fundraising process. So, you know, I think we're in this unprecedented time of interest in like e-commerce. And so, you know, I think if you are a business that could use more fuel for the fire, strike while the iron was hot. And, you know, as we've discussed, you know, I think one of the key points, of course, is that equity is the most expensive way to fund a company's growth. It takes a long long time to raise and can mean founders end up losing control of their business. So our main message is that founders have more options than they ever did before, and we'd really encourage them to check them out. Potentially, maybe we can also help on the journey, and if possible, we'd love to be there. So get in touch if we can help.
Yeah, once again, learn more about what Asher is doing at his company when you go to weareuncapped.com. There's a link for that in the show notes. For those of you that are still listening, you've probably felt my passion, frustration, and kind of being tired of the way that businesses have and continue to be funded. Because honestly, I am over it. I'm tired of banks wanting us to adapt to the way that we do business. And if you listen to the show regularly, I'm not really out. I'm not trying to make friends with bankers through the show unless they want to do something about changing it. So do something about it, banks. Like, you want our business and this is the way of the future. You need to learn how to change the way you're doing stuff, not us the other way around. So remember, as an owner of a rapidly growing business that's putting a lot of money into banks, you're the one with the lever, not them. They want your account. It's not the other way around. There is a whole lot of banks out there and they all want your business. Just go out and call them and see who's going to work with you a little bit if you need it. Now, I'm not saying don't use things like revenue-based financing, because even if you do find a bank that wants your business, is willing to do stuff with you, it's still like a long ass road to get the funding. So it's probably, and another thing that stood out is your 6%. It's not a whole lot. That's affordable. It's not like you're not holding people hostage there. So, there's a lot, it's check it out. And I think that so many people are frustrated with just funding in general. And I always ask them when they mention it, I'm like, how many different things did you explore? We are in a whole new world. Everything from like equity-based crowdfunding is now a real thing. That wasn't when I started being an entrepreneur. It wasn't even legal. And, the world is catching up to, finding better ways to get qualified entrepreneurs, founders, and companies into the resources they need. Make sure you check that out. If you have a little extra time, come join us in the Startup Hustle Facebook chat group. We've got thousands of people in there. We publish bonus content. If you haven't had enough, go check out Startup Hustle TV on YouTube. A lot of great stuff going on there as well. Asher, I'm going to catch up with you next time.
Thanks a lot. Great to be.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.